It's another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast here on this Sunday, December the 1st, 2024, of course. I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG, and I'd love for you to be part of the newsletter, Substack.com/TalkingMetsNoG. Less than the price of a cup of coffee a month for great content. Be a part of it. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to the first December edition. Really, the hot stove is getting a little crackly here. The Dodgers ripped off the cellophane of the hot stove with Blake Snell and Tommy Edman. I know there's a lot of anger about those deals and the deferrals. We'll get into that. Juan Soto unconfirmed rumors with the Red Sox. Everybody's freaking out about the rumor mill being bad now. It was always bad. And how do I know what's real and what's not? And oh my God, what is this Red Sox stuff? I'm going to give you my take. Just calm down. I'm going to give you my take. And then in the second half of the program, what is Plan B? And I know that Plan B, you know, you get yourself in trouble for saying stuff like that today. And that's an unintentional funny I think I made there. You'll get that where I'm going. But what is the Mets Plan B, okay, in the event that Soto doesn't sign? We haven't really even gotten into that. So we will get into that in the back half of the show. But look, I hope you had a great turkey day. Are you on like your third or fourth helping of stuffings? I didn't really have, not that you care about my turkey dinner. It was just my wife and I. We had a little bit more of a quaint, quiet Thanksgiving. And she's not a turkey fan. So I went out, got a couple of turkey slices. I put it in the oven and heated that up with my stuffing and my turkey gravy that I got from Whole Foods. And I made a pasta, and I got this vodka sauce off the shelf from Rao's, which was really good. So I made pasta. So we had a combination of pasta and turkey, just enough for the two of us. A lot of pasta left over because I made a big plate. So I am rip-raring, ready to go. I am not in a turkey comb. I'm not giving you my menu from Thanksgiving because I think you care. I'm just letting you know I'm ready to go. I got my cup of coffee. I'm coming to you on a football Sunday late in the NFL season. And early, you know, afternoon. So who knows now with the way that the hot stove works, how this news is going to travel. But I figured it's safe to come to you because things are about to get real. The winter meetings are about a week away. And I think the Juan Soto situation is about to get real. And you're already starting to hear some things. And it's probably upsetting you for a variety of reasons. But before I get to that, let me just talk about this deferral stuff with the Dodgers, which is driving everybody nuts. And it started with Ohtani, and the more I read about it, it bothered me when I heard about it with Ohtani, because I was on the assumption, erroneously, that, you know, basically it's circumventing the luxury tax. And to a certain degree, it is. And I don't know, I don't have Ohtani's numbers in front of me, but with Snell in particular, the Dodgers are saving about $4 million against the luxury tax, which is not a lot, but it is helpful when you're trying to go out there and build secondary parts of your roster. And they did the same thing. I don't know the particulars of Edmonds' deferrals. It's, what, a third of the contract? And everybody's getting crazy. And I think the guys over at MetsFix, JB and those guys, did an excellent job. I'm a subscriber. Again, no vested interest in you spending money over there other than it's worth it for you to be able to have the best fan experience possible. I always feel education and understanding the sport. If you're into that and you don't want to just watch the games and be top surface and have top surface analysis that you could get anywhere, subscribe to MetsFix. It's worth it. You know, you subscribe to MetsFix. You subscribe to our good friend John Struble at Mets Rewind. You, of course, subscribe to the Talking Mets podcast, Beyond the Mic newsletter. And whoever else is out there that's either free or paid. And I know budgets are tight, so I'm not trying to say you should stretch your budget, but there's always coupons and things that Substack offers. So I'm telling you to go out there. So the guys at MetsFix broke this down. And essentially, the real benefit here with deferrals is Snell saving on California taxes, which, let's face it, it's I don't know if it's the highest tax state. I know New York is up there. Massachusetts is up there. It's probably the highest tax state. I mean, as a New Yorker, I don't live in the city. I know you guys in the city get hit with the city stuff, but it's their high taxes out here. And then there's property taxes, yada, yada, yada. We all, you know, that's not what this show's about. So to get all angry about circumvention of the luxury tax, that's really not the case with these deferrals. What I laugh about is JB points this out about how, you know, deferring this amount of money, and he figured out kind of like from where the interest rates are and where the Dodgers ownership group would have to take that money and invest it to actually make money on the deferrals. You know, it's really a smart way of doing business. But for years, this has been going on for years. I mean, the Nationals did this with Scherzer and Jason Worth, and I'm sure others over the time. You know, the Mets always get hit with Bobby Bonilla. And look, this is what the Wilpons were trying to do. The only problem between the Wilpons and the Nationals and the Dodgers is that they were investing with a Ponzi scheme instead of real investments. So, look, this is not a big deal. It is helping circumvent the cap. Well, I shouldn't say the cap. That's a dirty word in baseball. That I might get struck by Rob Manfred's lightning for even saying that. The luxury tax threshold. It does help. But, you know, the real thing here that you have to ask yourself as a baseball fan and as somebody who's watching the Mets here, obviously, the player has a say in this, too. The Dodgers are not going to Tommy Edman. They're not going to Blake Snell. They're not putting them in a room at gunpoint. God forbid. God forbid it. You know, can you joke about that these days? They're not tying them up in a room. Let's do something more benign. They're not tying them up in a room and saying, you're not going to leave. We're going to hold you hostage in this basement until you sign this deal for deferred money. These guys want to play in L.A. They want to be in the sunshine of the West Coast. They want to save some money, because they're smart business people and their agents are smart business people. And they're basically telling the Dodgers, I want to be here and I want to save some tax money. And by the way, I'm going to make it easier for you to who wants to be here by giving you this savings and deferring the money. Helps the team with some of their current cash flow. Obviously, at some point, it's like a credit card. It's got to be paid. So, you know, as these down the road many, many years, these are going to be against the Dodger team, whoever owns it, Ledger. And who knows if the current group's even going to own the damn thing. So smart for them. And the in a lot of ways, the player gets somewhat of a post-career annuity to be built up. Not that he's making interest. Maybe there is. Maybe there's some deal there. We don't know. He's going to get some income in his post-career because obviously as a young person, some of these guys in their early 30s, late 20s, whatever, sometimes you get a little bit, you know, big for your britches and you spend a lot of money. There was an ESPN 30 for 30 many, many years ago. It's called Broke, and it was about athletes just wildly spending. Entertainers, you've heard about MC Hammer going broke, wildly spending. So it works for the player. It works for the team. And here's the thing. People want to play for the Dodgers because they're the Dodgers, they're LA. The Lakers have had this advantage for years. This could be a beautiful thing. The Mets, I don't know if they're there yet. The Yankees have had it for years. Maybe that's fading a little bit. And they're still getting paid. So there's really nothing to be angry about when it comes to these deferrals. There's no reason to change the rules. The only rule change is going to happen. And I promise you, if they try to do this, the owners, in the next collective bargaining agreement, is if they try to impose a salary cap, you're going to have 1994 all over again. You're going to destroy the sport. You're going to blow it up. And it's even worse today with all the other options young people have. And I've talked about this. Young people are not necessarily gravitating towards this sport. It's still a very popular sport. I think it's at its pockets in parts of the country where it has more of a solidified popularity and ability to withstand some of the BS that goes on in the boardroom. But they will destroy the sport. They had their chances years ago. They never were able to do it. They've been trying to get a salary cap since the mid-80s with collusion. They failed in 94. They had a better shot then than they do now. And if they try to go that route, they're sadly mistaken. Now, you want to say, I think the luxury tax penalties, I mean, maybe they start to do like what the NBA does with the second apron and they start to limit your ability to make moves. Maybe that's something that will happen. I could see that happening. I know the Players Association is not going to like it, but I mean, the NBA kind of, you saw that with the Knicks and how they lost Isaiah Hartenstein, not because they didn't want to pay him. They couldn't pay him. That was a unique situation with early bird rights and everything. You know, that could be a situation. But part of that, I'll be honest with you, the NBA's salary cap and the aprons and everything, that's determined by revenue. And that changes. There's been off seasons where there's been a boondoggle in money available for free agents because of good revenue. And then there were years where there wasn't. And I haven't seen this luxury tax thing move all that much. I don't have the exact figures in front of me, but it hasn't moved all that much. And to me, as salaries explode, as you see a Blake Snell, a very good pitcher, get about $36 million a year, as you've seen Max Scherzer get $43 million a year, as you will see Juan Soto probably get $50 million AAV, and you go look across town and a guy like Karl-Anthony Towns making $50-plus million a year, NBA players making $60 million a year, quarterbacks making $55, $60 million a year in the NFL. I understand it's way different in terms of game. Why can't baseball players make that money? And why is it that you, to do that, you can't build a team around them? Now, you want to talk about the disparity in terms of local revenues and everything? Fine, I get it. I get it. But let me tell you something, okay? If they didn't have it, they wouldn't spend it. And they're still spending a lot of money in this game. They're still spending a lot of money. And right now, as an owner, you know, if you were to own a team, you have to probably be an equity group to really own a team. It's going to be very hard for an individual by themselves. The old used carsman, you know, the Bud Seeligers of the world that bought the team, or a local Long Island real estate developer, Fred Wilpon, and a publishing magnate in Doubleday buying a team, going to be hard. Doubleday was pretty wealthy, but still, at some point, you know, and you heard this, we talked about this with John Middleton and Soto. You don't want to lose, you know, anytime that you lose money as a franchise, whether it's on salary doing it or you didn't bring in the revenue, there is a lot of overhead here. Remember, running a baseball team is a lot of overhead. There's called a cash call. And whether you're a 1% owner or a 99% owner or 100% owner, the cash call means, hey, 1% owner, Mike Silva, I'm not. We lost $7 million. You're 1% of that. Where's my check? And you need to have that check. And a lot of people don't want to do that. And I don't blame them, because at some point that becomes a really, really expensive hobby. And just because you're rich doesn't mean you want to blow money around. So that's that. I'll start with the deferrals. The Mets could do the same thing, but that's really where I'm going. I started there for a reason. I'm going there because there's all these unconfirmed rumors from these weird sources that Soto's going to Boston, he's going to the Red Sox, he's looking for real estate. Whatever, there's all these different things going around. I have no idea what's real. Nesson's picking it up, saying the Red Sox are gaining momentum. And we know the Red Sox are in this thing. They've met with Soto. And you heard early in the week that the Yankees jumped their offer up and things like that. But you don't really know what's real. And it used to be, and I think we have this idea that the hot stove is like a score ticker. And you're getting all the, you're entitled to information on and updates. And if you don't get updates, it's bad. And if you do get updates, it's real. And then you get mad when you get updates from these weird sources, because sometimes people hear things through weird business channels. It's possible, you know, Chris Cotello, who is a student, and I think he's a Red Sox beat reporter. He started as a student breaking rumors over a decade ago. Who the hell was this guy? And he did. Our good friend Joe DiMeo over at SNY. I remember on AOL Instant Messenger back in the day, he had great information. He had met somebody who liked him, and he had great information on the Mets. And he actually, almost to a T back then, had told me what the Johan Santana deal was going to look like. And nobody gives him credit to this day, but I wasn't surprised when the Mets traded for Santana. He was telling all along, Mets have a good shot at this, and here are the reasons why, and here are the players. And it just happens is he happened to know somebody in the business that liked him and wanted to help him as an aspiring journalist. And look, he's on SNY now. It worked for him. So it can happen. But look, here's the deal. We've said from the start that the Mets had a monetary advantage and they had built some really good momentum with how things went later in the year. And I made it very clear that this is a generational player and this was a statement for multiple reasons. It was about building on the momentum of the World Series run, the NLCS run. It was about ripping the heart out of the Yankees, and it was about bringing a player that, quite honestly, and we've outlined that in other episodes, you could go back and listen, I'm not going to repeat myself, that will change the offense by himself. Never did I feel that they had no competition. Obviously, you have to take the Yankees seriously, but I've always said, and if you go back and listen, I've always been fearful that the Red Sox have this cachet and this pull, and if they want to get into the fray, and John Henry and that ownership group wants to go in and play big money baseball with Cohen, and remember something, Cohen will go and outbid. We always talk about that old story about the mansion that he wanted to buy up in Connecticut. That's from that book, Black Edge. But he also, and it's come through a lot of different sources here, that Cohen also is not going to be used. So if Cohen thinks he wants to go to Boston and that he's just going to up another $50 million for Soto to say no, he's not going to do that. So whether or not, you know, and you hear, oh, some people, oh, it's going to be announced tonight and he's looking at real, you know, houses and apart, whatever. I have no idea. I do think you should take the Red Sox seriously. I do think you should take the Red Sox as a threat seriously. And here's why. Boston is everything New York can be from a sports perspective, but it's unified and it's a small, big city. That's me talking. Yes, I understand Big Papi and Pedro and Manny and the Latino stars that have donned those uniforms. I saw the Vertucci commentary from 2022 when Soto grew up idolizing the Red Sox. And quite honestly, he's 26 years old, and Yankees fans don't want to hear this. The Red Sox over the last 25 years are more of the old Yankees than the Yankees are. Okay, they got more championships. They've fallen on a couple of years of hard times. Chaim Bloom came in, and ownership wanted to do things a different way, and they figured, hey, how about we do what the Rays did and save money? And they traded away Mookie Betts, but maybe now they're realizing that that wasn't the way a big market team runs, and there's a balance. Kind of what it looks like the Mets are trying to do with Stearns and Cohen. They got a great manager in Cora. I honestly am worried about the Red Sox. I'm not going to lie to you. And I feel like the Red Sox may have enough momentum where this is a problem. I've never felt that the Mets can't sell themselves versus the Yankees. I've never really felt he was in love with the Yankees. The Yankees strategy was straightforward. You came here, we traded for you, you put on the pinstripes, we got you to a World Series. Remember, we. And by the way, we're going to go out there and have Waldman and Sterling and the media tell you what a privilege it is to take less money to play for me. And I don't know how, whether it's the debt on the stadium or the fact that, remember, Cohen has a huge other business here. And he's got a bigger plan here. I mean, the community's already starting to like some of the things about his casino project. A lot of environmental things they got to get through and other things and other political gymnastics. But quietly before Thanksgiving, every single area that was impacted, council area, every single municipality that was involved where it could be impacted voted. That council voted for the casino. So there's a bigger thing at play here. And it's bigger than baseball. And he's other revenue streams, a lot more. He's way wealthier than Hal. And that's what's bothering the Yankee fan. But Boston, who has a lot of money, that Fenway ownership group has a lot of money with John Henry. And they've played big money baseball way before, you know, the Mets did. They have that Latino background, that affinity, that small big city, that manager. You know, maybe Mendoza's that guy too, but he's core is every bit. You know, he's one of the best managers in baseball. Everybody seems to really like, and he's always well respected and well regarded. So I think you should take this seriously. And look, I don't want to put odds on it, but, you know, if he's not going to go to the Mets, I think he's going to the Red Sox. I'm a little worried that he may be heading more in that direction. I'll be honest with you. And it has nothing to do with any kind of internet rumor. Just, there's a lot of smoke here. And it could be BS, but there's a lot of people that are saying things. And I'm like, is this the Ohtani to Toronto plane rumor? Or is there something more here? I just got a bad feeling about Boston. I'll be quite honest with you. And you guys know who listen every week. I've had this bad feeling for a while. I told you from the start, and I just gave you reasons why it's a good place to play. And I know people laugh at me on X and say, oh, New York, you know, Boston can't match up to New York. You've got the whole, you know, not that it's a state area, zone of the country, New England, behind you. You know, I've always been jealous of Boston because everybody's unified with their teams for the most part. You're all Celtics fans. You're all Pats fans. You're all Bruins fans. You're all Red Sox fans. And when you live and die like that, there's a community and a kinship. I mean, watching the recent Netflix documentary about the 04 Red Sox, looking at people the day after the Red Sox won a World Series, going to graves and draping the Red Sox jerseys over their loved ones' graves. Yeah, that could happen here. You know, the Rangers, 94, I lived through that. But for every Rangers fan that loved 94 and the breaking the curse, our curse here in New York, there was an Islanders fan that couldn't stand it. There was a Devils fan that couldn't stand it. Because you even got New Jersey now. It's not like it's New England where everybody's like on the same thing. You got New Jersey. For every Nick lover, there's this weird, you know, for whatever reason, Net fan that hates the Knicks. For every Met fan, there's a Yankee fan in the family. So, okay, it's a different dynamic, and I'm not saying it's bad, but it's not Boston. Look, if I had my druthers, I'd rather be in a sports environment like Boston. And I know it's probably going to get me canceled by some of you. I'm going to have, oh, I'm never going to listen to you again. You want to be a Red Sox fan? You go and root for the Red Sox. You go talk to them about the Red Sox. No, I'm not saying that. I love the Mets. I love you guys. But I wish it was just the Mets. I really do. And I wish we all were together. Man, it would help for this business model of this show, too, for sure, right? So anyway, I don't know what's true. I do think we should take it seriously. I think here's the good news. This plane's landing. I don't know if it's landing tonight. I don't think it's landing any later than a week from today. I think we're going to be having an emergency podcast at some point this week, either celebrating Soto or talking about what next. And then we have the winter meetings and a lot to talk about. And there's more to this Mets offseason than Soto. Will this be a buzzkill? Absolutely. This fan base is going to be a nightmare if he doesn't come here, especially if he signs with the Red Sox, especially if he maybe takes less money to go to the Red Sox. That's a conversation I'm not going to have today. That's something that we're going to have to deal with if and when it comes. So anyway, that's all I have for you. That's the Soto update. Is Soto shipping up to Boston? I don't know, but I would seriously worry about the Red Sox. They have something that money can't buy. And I'm not saying he's taking less money to go there. But they can play in the Cohen ballpark. And at some point, Cohen's going to say, hey, I'm not just giving you money here. There is a sky. There is a cap. It isn't the sky is the limit. At some point, you know, $700 million is a good number. And he's worth it. And I suspect he's going to have opt-out similar to A-Rod. He'll probably have an opt-out 4 years in or 3 years in when he's 29 hitting 30. So maybe he could get another contract or stay with the current contract. And just like A-Rod, when he opted out after 07, he wound up making more money in the long run. Well, he actually lost money because he wound up getting suspended. But you guys get the picture. So whatever you saw him do, Boris, with A-Rod, he's going to do here. The blueprint's out there, and we'll see where it goes. So anyway, let's take a quick break. When I come back, what is Plan B? I'm not putting Plan B out there because I think it's over. But I think it's important for us to finally have an idea of what the rest of the offseason is going to look like outside of Soto. And some of Plan B could still be Plan A with Soto. But obviously, I want to talk more about Plan B because I think it's important because there is an offseason, there is life, there is something to the Mets without Juan Soto. So let's take a quick break, and we'll have more Talking Mets podcast right after this.